Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special guest. He's going to talk about his book, Drop Dead Healthy. Yes, you heard that title correctly. It's a very funny title, and he's a very funny man. His name is A.J. Jacobs, and he's here. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me, David.
Thank you. I feel like I have a celebrity tonight because I saw you on Good Morning America. You've been all over the doing all your tour. I mean, I feel like I have somebody really, really famous tonight.
Well, you and my mother think that I'm really famous, so I'm very flattered.
This book, it still makes me laugh. I have about 100 pages more of it to go, but what I have read, I'm up to the eyes. I haven't read the sleep part yet, which is very important to me because I don't get enough sleep myself. But what was the goal of this book? I mean, what is the total goal? I mean, is it just that you needed to be more healthy, or were you trying to help other people too?
Well, a little of both, definitely. And I'm glad to hear you're laughing because there are studies that show that that is healthy. So you are getting healthier, hopefully. The origin was that I was in terrible shape 3 years ago. I was what they call skinny fat. So I looked like a snake that had swallowed a goat. And my wife said, I don't want to be a widow in my 40s. You've got to get in shape. So I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go all the way, like my previous books. I'm going to just take it to the extreme and see if I can follow all the medical advice in the world and what works, what doesn't, try to improve my diet, exercise, sleep, as you mentioned, stress, sex life, posture, you name it. And I wanted to help, as you mentioned, I wanted to help myself, but also by writing the book, I wanted to figure out what is the best pieces of advice, what is the best way to live healthy. So it was, because I like to have my books have a self-help element to them.
Now, did you pick everything in advance as far as what you were going to do, or did it sort of happen as you went along?
Well, I certainly did a couple of months of research where I wrote down just hundreds of pieces of advice. But then, as I was going along, that list just grew and grew. But it was an enormous list, you know, hundreds of things. Like, you know, there's meditation is good for you, so I wanted to try to meditate, sleep, putting on sunscreen, which, by the way, the dermatologists say if you really put it on correctly, you're putting on a lot of sunscreen, like one shot glass every 2 to 4 hours. That is a whole, but like I could have spent my whole book advance just on sunscreen.
Wow. Amazing. That is amazing when you think about it. People don't seem to be quite aware of what they're doing to their bodies. It's very scary. I mean, you hear so much today with people being totally overweight and not eating right and eating too much fast food. And I mean, there's so many ways to make a mistake.
It's true. That is definitely true. But there are also some easy ways to rectify things. I will say, it was a little alarming, some of the research I did, because to learn just how unhealthy some of our habits are, like sitting. I didn't realize how deadly sitting is. Like, one doctor told me that sitting is the new smoking. And that's maybe an overstatement, but it's not totally untrue, because it's terrible for your heart. It's like eating a Paula Deen bacon donut. It just does havoc to your heart. And so I try, if I'm sitting, I try to get up every half hour and walk around for a minute. Or I took it to the extreme and I bought a treadmill and put my desk on top of my treadmill, and I wrote the book while walking. So it took me 1,100 miles, about 1,200 miles.
Why am I laughing? I shouldn't be laughing, but I am. I mean, the situations in this book, are, some of them seem so ludicrous, and yet, you know, it really is, it's not a bad idea.
Well, thank you, David. I know. It does seem ludicrous, but I love it. I actually still do it. I kept that up, even though the project's been over for a year. I love it just because it keeps me awake and focused. You know, if I'm sitting at my desk, sometimes I just nod off.
It's true. I was reading the book last night. I felt like I should be walking around reading it rather than sitting. It's like, what can I do? I mean, it's the middle of the night. I can't walk around this neighborhood. The police will stop me and they'll wonder what I'm doing, reading a book. Because nobody, how many people do you see reading a book walking down the street?
Yeah, that could be dangerous in its own right because, yeah, you're distracted. You might get run over by a car. So, yeah, I think it's okay to read. Reading is an exception. You're allowed to read.
Well, that's good because well, people read in bed at night. I guess that's bad for you too. Like,
yeah, a little if you do it too much. I do read on the treadmill. I do like to do that. And when I loved going to the gym during this year because I would see people. I saw one Orthodox Jewish guy studying his Torah on the. On the treadmill. I thought that was nice.
I'm curious what the reaction of your wife is, all this change. I mean, you've changed quite a bit from when you started this. And how is she reacting to the new AJ? How you seem?
Overall, she's very happy that I'm healthier because that was part of the motivation for the book was that she wanted me to get healthy. But I think she thinks I took it way too far. At least during the project.
But that's what you do in your books. I mean, you did it with the Bible.
Exactly. That's my MO. And I will tell you, compared to the Bible, this book was much easier on my wife. Because during the Bible says you cannot shave. So I had this huge topiary on my chin, and she was appalled. She wouldn't kiss me for 6 months. And then there's another part of the Bible where it says that women are impure during their time of month. And even if a woman sits on a seat while she's menstruating, a man cannot sit on that same seat because it's impure. And my wife found that offensive, so she sat in every seat in our apartment. And I had to stand for the whole year, which turns out to be healthy, come to think of it. That was doing me a favor.
People should take this book very seriously. That's the thing, but it does make you laugh. So, I mean, at a point you think, is he taking this too far? Is this going too far? How, what the heck are we supposed to eat? There's so many bad foods out there, and even foods that seem good aren't necessarily good. I mean, watermelon's not necessarily good for you.
That's true. It has a very high glycemic index. It's not terrible. It's not terrible. It's much different than processed foods or candy. I will say that I think, it is very confusing out there, but there are a few simple rules that if you follow, then I think you'll be in pretty good shape. And I actually subscribe to a diet very similar to the Michael Pollan diet, which is mostly plants, mostly plant food. If you're going to eat meat, do it as a sort of a side dish. And whole foods, the more you can eat the things that look like they just came out of the ground, the better. And avoiding refined carbs. I really do think those are kind of the devil, like white sugar and white flour. That will just make you fat by looking at it. You don't want that. So, yeah, if you can follow those. And also, by the way, portion control, this one was a nice little tip I learned, is I ran across this movement on the internet that was very passionate about chewing. They call their movement Chewdeism, and they say we have to chew 100 times per mouthful, which is crazy. That is insane, because I tried it, and it's like a day and a half to eat an apple. Like, you don't want to do that. But their point is right. We should chew more, because if you chew more, you eat more slowly, and then you eat less, and you actually lose weight. So anything you can do to slow down your eating is good. Wolfing down your food, you're just going to wolf down more and more.
Right. Well, tell me some of the big things you learned doing this. I mean, the book is divided into all the different parts of the body. I like the way that's done, by the way. And on the inside cover, where you can just turn to the page where if you want to know anything about the heart, you just turn to this certain page. It's really a cruel index in the beginning. Whose idea was that, anyway?
Well, this guy has done the index for three of my books, for the Know It All About the Encyclopedia and the Year of Living Biblically, and this one. His name is Sidney Cohen. I think he's the most brilliant indicer. I'm not sure what the verb
is. This is brilliant. You can tell him thank you. It's brilliant. I mean, it just is.
I will tell him. I know. I think that could could be published as a magazine article alone. Like, I think that would be enjoyable to read. His, and it's not my work, so I'm not praising my own work, but his work is great. It's very clever. So anyway, some of the bigger things I learned, well, certainly the no-sitting, the importance of moving all the time. That was a very big thing, because if you go to the gym for an hour, which you're lucky if you do, but if you go to the gym and then for the rest of the day you're just sitting on your butt, that, unfortunately, is almost as bad as not going to the gym at all. That's what the studies show, that it's important to keep moving all the time, or as much of the time as possible. So, you know, a simple one is taking the stairs instead of the elevator.
Maybe you shouldn't even have a desk.
There you go.
Get rid of the desk, you know? As you say in the book, why tempt yourself with these things when you're only going to be tempted and do it eventually anyway?
Exactly. Can you imagine a world without desks?
But I never, and there's so much about sugar nowadays. I mean, and sugar, I mean, I drink a lot of fruit juices. Now I'm hearing that sugar's not good even in fruit juices. So it's like no matter where you turn, sugar is just not good for you.
I am afraid I am on that. I'm on board with that movement. I am on board with the sugar is pretty bad movement. I did find most of the sugar substitutes, by the way, are still terrible for you. Like agave nectar, it's pretty much as bad as sugar. Sugar is sugar. But there is one exception, and that is stevia. Stevia, from the scientists I talked to, they say that one actually is better for you. So if you're going to use anything, try stevia.
I've never even heard of stevia before I read your book. I'm like, what's stevia? It sounds like somebody's name.
Maybe that's what they're trying for.
Well, maybe it is. Is it widely available for everybody?
Oh, sure. It's it should be in any health food store, maybe any grocery. It comes from leaves, but they crush it up, and you can buy it so it looks like a packet of sugar.
Now, do you go around your house? I know you're in an apartment, I know. Do you go around telling everybody to stand up all the time? I mean, I can just see you doing that. Stand up. Don't sit down anymore.
I do try. Well, luckily, I have three sons who are young, like 8 and 5 and 5, so they can't sit still, and I used to be upset about it. Sit down at the table, get control of yourself. But now I realize it's much a healthier way to live, so I'm okay with it.
I don't think I'm going to be able to sit down tonight. I think I just better stand right now doing the interview.
Exactly.
Seriously, it's like, it makes you think about everything you're doing, and that's the point of the book, I'm sure, a part of it, just to be aware of everything you do. But then people
That's
would
true.
Say, well, how in the world could you, and like you said, there's two basic rules, and but there to follow everything in this book that was good for you, it would be very difficult.
And I think unhealthy. I think that there's a limit to, you can become unhealthily obsessed with health, which is kind of what I did, to just, that was, as you know, that was sort of the point of the book.
I want to meet your aunt.
She's wonderful.
Your aunt is a trip. I mean, she ought to have her own show.
It's so true. Yeah, she was the most conscious, made the most health-conscious decisions I've ever met in my life, of anyone I've ever met.
How did you get a blurb from Dr. Oz? Did he really, he read your book and sent you a blurb? Amazing.
He did. I was very flattered. He's done a couple of things for Esquire, and my day job is at Esquire. So I had met him once, and I just got the book to him, and he was nice enough to give a blurb. But, yeah, he's America's doctor, as they say, so it was nice to have his little stamp of approval.
What were some of the most difficult things in the book? Were there difficult parts to write? Were there difficult things to test?
Oh, sure. Well, for me, I had never really exercised, so going into this, where I tried every workout possible, that was hard, and doing a triathlon, that was not easy. So, but I tested dozens of workouts, so something called CrossFit, which is extreme, which is really hardcore workout. It's a national chain, and their mascot is Pukey, P Pukey the mascot.
You're not making this up either.
No, that's true. They want you to like not get to work out so much that you feel sick. That's their goal. I went and tried something called the caveman workout, which was I love. It was hilarious. Not something I do a lot, but you go to the park and you take off your shoes and you exercise like cavemen. You throw boulders and climb trees, and it's a fun experience.
You really have no shame at all. You will do anything.
That is true. I do have no shame when my work.
I like that part where you were outside and you were climbing one of the traffic lights or something.
Oh,
or doing
yes.
Push-up on the you actually went out and did that, and you're not the least bit looking around thinking, people are thinking I'm crazy. You just do it.
Well, my son was the one who's like, all right, Dad, that's enough. But this was actually a tip from a magazine. It said, here's one way to exercise when you're waiting for the traffic light, to do pull-ups on the traffic. This is in New York where they have the walk signs. So I tried it. And I suppose it works, but my son won't let me do it anymore.
So you're embarrassing your whole family.
Exactly.
But you don't even care, do you?
A little bit. I don't want to.
It's all for a good cause, though. So
That's what I tell them.
Well, that's when you go back to your wife and you say, "Well, you wanted me to get healthy. This is how I'm going to do it, whether you're embarrassed or not."
That's right. She created the Frankenstein.
Your wife must be very patient.
She is patient. She is indeed. Although she gets back at me, like when she sat on all the seats, or when I was doing the encyclopedia, I had so many facts in my brain that I couldn't help but share them. And after a while, she started to fine me $1 for every irrelevant fact I inserted into conversation. So there are ways that she gets back at me.
And that reminds me of the Nazi party check.
Oh yeah.
Now, were you really seriously going to donate that money? That was in all seriousness, you would have done that.
Well, I think so, but that was just to explain, to back up. It was this idea I got from a Nobel Prize winning economist that if you want to break a bad behavior, you've got to. One way to do it is that you have to pay if you do the bad behavior. But if you really want an incentive, you should pay it to some horrible organization, because that is repulsive to you. So my idea was that I write a check of $100 to the American Nazi Party, and if I ate these sugary snacks, then my wife would send off the check. And I think she would have, but it was so effective that I couldn't even look at these snacks without, it wouldn't even cross my mind to eat those snacks.
Those mango snacks, yeah. Who knew those mango? Does that include all those dry fruit things you can buy at the store, those packages? They're all full of sugar?
I'm afraid so. I mean, the worst thing is they're not that terrible for you if you get them without added sugar, but most of these dry fruits, they just add sugar as if they need it. It's already sweet, and they just add more sugar.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it's just crazy. And I assume that I don't know what they do with raisins. I like to eat raisins, but I guess they're full of a lot of sugar too.
Right. Oh yeah, they are. They're kind of
even though it's quote natural sugar, it's still. I mean, you hear on all these commercials that your body can't tell the difference between real sugar and fake sugar.
Right. I know. It's unfortunate. It is unfortunate. Sugar, as one of the top nutritionists I met said, sugar is sugar. There's nothing you can do about it.
Did you ever at any point want to give up?
Oh, sure. During all of my projects, I want to give up.
So what made you not give up besides your wife saying you got to do it?
Well, I am sort of obsessive compulsive, I think, mildly obsessive compulsive. So I feel the need to try to finish these things. It's like, I am not a particularly outdoorsy guy, so I'm never going to climb a mountain. I'm never going to climb Mount Everest. But this is sort of my, I see these as my mountains.
So do you ever sit and watch TV? I guess that's a no-no.
That is a no-no. I would stand and watch TV sometimes. I'll tell you, watching TV and eating, there's studies that show that you eat as much as 70% more if you have a meal while watching TV because you're distracted.
Does that include reading, too? If you're reading while you're eating?
No, reading while eating, I'm sure, is very healthy. I'm not going to say anything bad against books, because that's where I make my living.
Okay. But, you have to be careful about that, don't we?
Exactly.
We can't bite the hand that feeds us now, can we?
That's right.
And your wife's very intelligent, too, because she watches Mad Men, one of my favorite shows, so I applaud. Applauding her just for that, reading that book. Is there a picture of your wife in the book, by the way?
There is. It should be. I guess it's at the end. There's a shot of all of us after I did a race. You know what? There's a section where I made my wife do a juice cleanse, which she was not happy about. And here it is. I found it. It's on page 268, if you want to see what she looks like.
268. I'm dying to see what she looks like. Oh, that's your wife. Yeah. Yeah, look at the look on her face. I love that third picture. That's a classic. You seem to be one who likes to, well, do I want to say shock, or do I want to say do things to rattle other people, too? That seems, you seem to enjoy that.
I do. Well, I don't like to shock just for the sake of shock, but I like to make people think about new things in a different way. We take so much of life for granted, and we just believe things that we're told, even if there's no evidence behind them. So I like to sort of go in and see what's real and what's not.
But I think we're also getting to the point where we're hearing so many different things that people are not believing anything anymore. It's getting worse because, I mean, you hear one day coffee's bad for you, the next day it's good for you. I mean, everything seems to change by day.
It's true. It can be very confusing. I agree. And by the way, though, I think that overall coffee is good for you. Looking at all the studies, that the good parts outweigh the bad parts. It does stave off Alzheimer's, and it does prevent certain types of cancers like bladder and breast. It's not so great for the heart if you drink too much of it. So maybe one or two cups a day.
And no sugar.
That's true. No sugar.
Some
of those Starbucks coffees are not coffee. They're dessert. They are like, you know, they just load them up with caramel.
You've got 27 chapters here. It's really interesting because you even have a chapter on the gonads, which is just funny. I mean, where else would you find a chapter called the gonads in any book? You know? It's like, unless it was a health book, you know. I just love it. I mean, you have such a natural sense of humor. Have you always been like that?
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I've always been a fan of humor. I loved to listen to Steve Martin when I was a kid. And when they still had records, they actually listened to comedy records. Mm-hmm. So those have been my two great passions, is sort of knowledge and learning new things and humor. So combining them is I feel very lucky that I can have a job where I combine the two.
Now, are you going to be able to get your kids doing all this stuff that you're doing? I mean, do you think? I mean, or have you already gotten them to do it?
A little bit. They're a little better, and they are. And sometimes my kids now, they bust me. Like if they see me eating something, they're like, "Dad, that's not healthy. What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh boy, I created a monster." But they still eat quite a bit of sugar, salt, and fat. Unfortunately, I did when the book came out. Nightline, the news show, came and did they followed me around for a day to do a segment on me. And one of the things they wanted me to cook a healthy meal for my kids. I was terrified that my kids were not going to eat their broccoli, you know, and that I would look like an idiot on national television. So basically, I starved them for 3 days so that they were like, "All right, broccoli." I didn't actually starve them, but I did go light on the snacks that afternoon.
You seem to be a very easygoing dad. I mean, you're a very loving dad. That comes through in the book too.
That's really have. Nice.
I'm sorry.
I said that's very nice to hear. I do. I mean, I love my kids. I am maybe too easygoing. But I'm working on it.
but I think you have a side that's knows what he needs to do with his kids too. I mean, you do seem to be a little bit of a pushover, but aren't all dads a little bit of a pushover?
That's what I think exactly. But hopefully, I can push back when the time is. In those times when I really need to.
Now, what did you weigh when you started this, and what do you weigh now?
I weighed, I believe it was 178, and I went down about 20 pounds, and I'm at about 160 now. So I didn't lose a tremendous amount of weight because I think I redistributed some of the weight. So I took a lot of the stuff that was just hanging out in my midsection, and I bulked up a bit with my chest and shoulders.
Boy, I want to start drinking coffee now after hearing that about Alzheimer's, because I've got Alzheimer's in my family, and my dad had Alzheimer's. So I think I want to start drinking more coffee, but coffee is not good for my heart. I've had heart trouble, so...
Oh, yeah, see, it's a trade-off for sure. So, well, I will tell you, I don't know if you like to drink alcohol, but one glass of alcohol a day is definitely correlated to longevity. So that made me feel better. I enjoyed that.
There you go. So does it have to be red wine, or can it be anything?
It can be anything. Red wine does have an additional benefit because it's got the resveratrol, which some people say has life-extending properties. But any kind of alcohol is correlated, like so beer, liquor, but in moderation. You know, you can't. People who drink one drink a day generally live longer than teetotalers or heavy drinkers. So you just want to have just the one.
Now, there's one part of the book, and I can't remember which part I read it in. You mentioned something about ice cream, about how bad it is to eat ice cream.
Well, I'm afraid so. But you shouldn't. One lesson I learned is that you shouldn't deprive yourself all the time, because that's no fun. And having a fun life is part of being healthy. I think if you're happier, you're going to be healthy. You're going to live longer. So there is such a thing, I think, as I mentioned, of being overly obsessed with health. One doctor I talked to came up with the term orthorexia, which is an unhealthy obsession with healthy foods. Because if you're so obsessed with getting just the right asparagus, you know, with the perfect, antioxidants and no toxins, and if that's all you spend your time doing, that's not healthy. If you can't go out to dinner with your friends, that's not healthy, because having friends is a huge part of being a healthy person.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I like the way you mentioned that, too. It's more, having a lot of friends, and living alone isn't good for you, and I think we all know that. I mean, nobody wants to be alone, even if they have people who think they want to be alone. I don't think they really do want to be alone. They just don't.
Right.
They just not. Maybe they don't know how to deal with society. Maybe they get too angry at things, or whatever.
Exactly.
Whatever it might be.
But, yeah, generally, it's not good to be alone. I mean, you don't have to be married, but having a close circle of friends or family of some kind is very crucial to the health.
Which chapters do you think are going to help people the most in this, or are they pretty equal, do you think? Are there some that are much more helpful, do you think?
I do think that the main ones are diet, exercise, stress relief, brain, and sleep. Sleep is huge. I mean, there are some chapters that I find fascinating and readers have told me they like, but I don't think it'll extend your life too long. Like, there's a chapter on hands, because we take our hands for granted. And I interviewed this one guy who's sort of he calls himself the Richard Simmons of hands. He has the most physically fit hands in the entire world, and he'll tell you how to exercise your hands. So I love that stuff. But
what chapter is that? I have to read that one. I don't know that I got
that. Yeah. No, I think that's at the end, right. I saved some of the weirder stuff for the end. Yeah, that's chapter 23.
But it's, weird is okay, because it makes us laugh, too, so that's a good thing. I mean, and
that's what I figured.
And you actually there's actually a part in here where you actually laughed a lot, and you actually make a point of trying to laugh and to make yourself feel better.
Right. I went to a laughter yoga class because there are some studies that say that relieves stress. It's a very strange experience because you basically go there and it's you're there with about 15 strangers and you're told to laugh. You're not, there are no jokes because their theory is that jokes are subjective. So you just have to laugh and in the beginning, it is actually quite stressful. It's the opposite of stress relieving because you're forcing yourself to laugh and it's very uncomfortable. But after a while, it catches. I found myself at the end, I was actually laughing at how ridiculous the situation was, and I felt a little better.
That's great. I just love your fearlessness. I'm surprised you haven't climbed Mount Everest at some point in your life. You're just not afraid of anything. Are you afraid of heights? Oh, you are afraid of heights.
I am. I am indeed. That's why the mountain climbing is probably not going
to
happen.
But that, what makes you a great writer is you're not afraid to try anything. I mean, any situation is open to you. It's just
that is true. Well, I feel I mean, I do have fear, but I overcome it because I want that experience. I love having the experience.
What did you find out about water? I mean, how much water are we supposed to drink a day? You hear so many different opinions. What did you find out?
Yeah, the idea of 8 glasses of 8 ounces per day doesn't really have any scientific evidence behind it. But drinking a good amount of water is important. The Mayo Clinic, which I think is a very reliable source, says that you should drink as much water so that your pee is close to being clear. So you want very light pee. So that's sort of the guideline I go with. I don't. There's no formula. It's just drinking a good amount.
And I've also heard that you're supposed to drink water when you first get up in the morning. It's a good idea to drink water when you first get up.
That, I think, is true. I certainly try. And also filtered water. I was surprised to learn all of the impurities in tap water. It was kind of alarming. So I did start filtering just with a Brita Pure filter. For most people, those are good enough. Some people need, like, the $15,000 machines that totally purify their water.
So are you at the perfect weight right now, the weight you want to be at?
I do think I'm at the weight I want to be at. My wife has stopped calling me pregnant, and
that must have been hard.
I got all the jokes, like, I bet it. If he's a boy, he's going to love soccer and, that kind of stuff. So luckily, those days are over for now. Hopefully I keep it off.
Well, you're already a know-it-all, right? And you've already lived by every precept of the Bible, so you pretty much have done so many different things already. I mean, one wonders what you will tackle next.
I know. I'm wondering that myself. I've got some ideas. My kids want me to spend a year eating nothing but candy. That was their idea. And they said they would join me on that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they would. So they had no problem at all with it.
Exactly. They were very open to that.
I don't think that's a good idea.
That probably would not be a big seller. The publisher would have some issues with it.
I mean, and that's the thing with sugar. It's deceptive. And when you start eating it at first, I mean, you're eating candy. Sure, you feel good when you're eating it, but how do you feel 2 hours later?
That's true. Exactly. I mean, that's part of one of the things I found is trying to be kind to your future self. So think about yourself in the future. And even think about yourself, 30 years from now, and treat that guy with respect like you would treat a family member or a friend.
What were you like growing up? I can only, I mean, you're obviously a nice guy. I mean, you're easy to talk to. You love to laugh.
Right. I think I was a nice guy growing up. I tried. I was definitely, a bit nerdy as I probably still am.
Well, what's wrong with being nerdy though?
Nothing, especially now. It was, I think nerdiness has been reclaimed.
But look at the Big Bang Theory. I mean, there's nerds galore on that show, and people love it.
That's right. People love it. I was obsessed with buying trivia books. I love that stuff. So I spent a lot of my time reading reading that early on.
Right. Now, you also mentioned about puzzles. It's good to be doing crossword puzzles and word puzzles, and they're really good for the brain, and that makes sense. And should you do that? I mean, how much of your day should you spend doing that?
Well, I don't think there's a set amount. I don't think you need to follow a regimen. But in general, the metaphor that the brain is like a muscle, I think, has some truth to it, that the more you exercise the brain, the better shape it's going to be. And so crossword puzzles or memorizing things, arguing, getting in sort of intellectual debates is good for you. One thing I thought was interesting is that a lot of the brain scientists say that you should to try to do things in a new way, because we carve these neural pathways in our brain. Every time we do something the same way, it becomes harder and harder to break out of that. So they suggest, you know, doing even small things like going to work a different route, or brushing your teeth with your left hand.
Or go get lost going to the mall, you know?
That's true. I don't have to do that, because I do that all the time. It's a terrible sense of direction. But
so it's good to get lost.
It probably is good to get lost. You see new things.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, who would ever thought we would say that it was good to get lost? When people tell you to get lost, they're actually telling you a good thing, you know, not a bad thing.
That's very nice advice from them.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, who wants to be the same person every day? A lot of people get up the same time every day. They go to the bathroom the same time every day. And that's another point about this book. You make there's a chapter devoted to how much you should go to the bathroom.
I do have a chapter on the bathroom, which I'm very interested in. And, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about what goes in, but we don't talk a lot about what goes out. So I thought at least a chapter on that would be important.
It must be good to go to the bathroom in the forest, you know, because you're not sitting on anything.
Totally. That is true. I mean, I was shocked that there is a healthier way to go to the bathroom, and that is squatting instead of sitting. I had been doing it wrong for 40 years.
What kind of reactions are you getting to this book? I can only imagine what people are writing in and asking you or telling you, or they must, are they telling you you're crazy? What are they telling you?
No, I've been very flattered. People say it's very inspiring and making them get healthier, and they like to learn about the facts. The one thing is that some people think that I'm, you know, somehow have become the medical expert of all medical experts through this. So, like at one of my readings, a woman came up to me and she said, you know, I have this rash under my eye that's really itchy. What should I do? And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not actually a doctor, so I don't think I can prescribe you an ointment. But I did recommend lanacane, which is what I use, and she seemed happy with that.
Now, tell me about this stuff that you put under your eye where it was taking the wrinkles away from your face. Was it really working, and did it work in the long run?
It does work, but it's expensive. So you have to, if you have a lot of money and you're vain, then that is definitely a way to go. Retin-A, it's called. Although it has some drawbacks. My wife, you know, got a rash when she used it. And there's no real health benefits to it. It's almost totally cosmetic. So, but it does work to an extent. It is one of the few skin creams that works. Retin-A or retinol.
There's going to be a mass buying of this now. When people read your book, they're all going to want to go and buy it. $80 for 2 ounces, I think you mentioned it. That's an amazing amount of money.
Exactly.
I mean, you could go broke just buying this stuff. But at least you're healthy. At least you're younger.
You look good, even if you have no money, right?
Tell me what you ate today. I want to know what I want to get an idea of what you eat in the course of a day.
I breakfast, I try to eat egg whites and fruit, because I think that that's a problem we have, is that breakfast has somehow turned into dessert. So, like, waffles and pancakes and cereal, they're all, like, very, very sweet. So I try to, you want to get some protein at breakfast, because that will keep you from being hungry. breakfast, I had that, and for lunch, I did have a salad, I have to say. I had it, like, I load the vegetables in, so avocado,
so do you romaine lettuce or iceberg?
I do spinach, actually.
You do spinach? Wow.
And then I haven't had dinner, so I don't know, but I have... I just had a Greek yogurt.
That doesn't sound like a lot of food so far today.
Well, I have done some snacking. That's been the good part. I've been, unfortunately, I did have a mango, a dried mango a while ago, and my wife made fun of me for it. She did not send the check off to the Nazi party because that has we pulled the plug on that.
And there's another point too. If you can make fun of yourself, I mean, how much more life is fun when you can make fun of yourself? I mean, we all know there are serious people in this world who don't like to do that. But I mean, if you can look at yourself with humor, that's got to be good for your health too.
That is, I agree. I think not taking it, it's all part of not being too stressed out. I think if you take things way too seriously, then that just, your cortisol level is going to go through the roof. So I do think humor is an incredibly important tool for health.
And that's the thing with stress, though. I mean, we all think of stress. You see on TV where somebody, you know, they're going to have a heart attack, they're having stress, and they're hyperventilating. But it's not always, the signs of stress are not always that obvious, are they?
No, that's true. I mean, we all have a tremendous amount of stress, and it doesn't necessarily manifest itself. But there are some very good stress management techniques. One of them I like is that actual physical human contact will lower your stress level. One study said that if you hold hands with your partner, your spouse, then your stress levels go down. But even if you hold hands with a stranger, your stress level goes down. That I did not do because I thought it would also be stressful to get punched in the nose.
Yeah, exactly. No, that wouldn't be fun.
No. That wouldn't.
You have to have some common sense along with the stuff that spoke to you.
Exactly.
You can't just go out and do all these things and not expect there to be some kind of consequence as a result of it.
Exactly.
Did you laugh while you were writing this book too?
While I was actually
writing it,
it up. Sometimes that's when you know that, at least for me, that you've struck something is when you can make. And I don't generally laugh out loud, but I smile, and I can feel it. If something clicks, and I'm like, that works. So that's what, I have a friend who's a writer for The Daily Show who says that his favorite thing is when he surprises himself while writing. Like, then he knows he's onto something.
You mean Jon Stewart isn't naturally funny? He doesn't come up with all those things himself? Somebody actually writes it for him? That's horrifying.
Sorry to burst the bubble. I know.
I always thought Letterman was so funny, but apparently it's not Letterman that's funny.
Well, I think Jon Stewart is pretty darn funny, but he has some help as well.
Right. Now, as far as sleep, we didn't even touch on sleep really, but how much sleep do you get a night now? What do the experts say as far as sleep? I mean, everybody hears 8 hours, but should you get 8 hours no matter what age you are?
Well, the age actually, it doesn't change that much with age. The idea that you need less sleep as you get older is not really backed up by science. The actual amount varies from individual to individual, but 95% of people are in the 7-hour to 9-hour range, that will give them the best. And I was surprised by how important sleep is to your health. I mean, if you don't get it, it is terrible. Sleep deprivation is bad for your heart. It's bad for your brain. It literally lowers your IQ the next day if you have a bad night's sleep and can't solve problems as easily. It affects driving. It's like as bad as drunk driving, sleep deprived driving. So it's so crucial, and it's annoying to me because I actually don't like to sleep. I'm not a fan, but I force myself to sleep more.
But now that you're healthier, is it easier to sleep?
It is, in a sense, because I'm moving around all day. So I'm, you know, I'm tired by the end of the day. So
You know what puts me to sleep every time? This is going to sound so stupid, and I've told people this, and they think I'm nuts. But I actually talk to myself, and I go right to sleep.
That's interesting. I'll have to try that. I'll tell you, I got a great sleep tip from a doctor, which is if you want to fall asleep, don't count sheep, because that doesn't do anything. But if you do count backwards by threes, that actually helps. So you start at a random number like 582, and then you go 579, 576, 573, and that's just challenging enough and just boring enough that it'll put you to sleep.
How about, I'm going to try that. Boy, that sounds like a good idea, too. But every time I talk out loud, I end up falling asleep. Next thing I know, it's the next morning. It's great.
What are you discussing? What are you saying?
whatever I've done during the day, what interviews I'm going to be doing, you know, what I'm reading.
Interesting.
I'll pretend I'm a talk show host. I really sound like a loser now, don't I?
Or a genius, one of the two.
Well maybe. But the fantasy life is a wonderful thing. Let's face it. I mean, who doesn't want to fantasize about things?
That's true. Yeah, and I'm sure there's lots of studies that show that that's good for you.
I mean, and yes, you have to get back to reality. I know, and no, not everybody would do the things that I do. But you know what? I don't care if they work for me. I'm going to do them, and they're not. I'm not hurting anybody.
That's right. I mean, a lot of it is what works for you. That is, medicine is so individual that a lot of these things, you just have to test them out. That's the whole idea of the mind book.
And that's another point. You spend a lot of money doing all these things for the book. I can imagine. I can only imagine the amount of the cost involved with trying all these things out. It's not cheap to do some of these things that you did.
That is true. Yeah, I bought a whole bunch of equipment, and some of it was expensive, like the these compression suits, which they make you look like a superhero, and they're supposed to make your muscles recover more quickly. But I'll tell you, the equipment that changed my life the most was $20. It was a pedometer, and you can get them for even cheaper, because that made me walk so much more, because the doctors say that your goal should be 10,000 steps. And it just made me, having a pedometer made me want to get to those 10,000 steps. So you don't have to spend a lot of money.
Right. Yeah, that's great. It is, and that's such a great thing to do, too. I mean, just simply taking a walk. And if you're ever troubled and you walk around the block, you don't feel the same way when you've come back. You don't. Your mind's a lot clearer.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, the exercise is like, I think I say in the book, it's like Adderall and Prozac and combined, because it changes your mood, it changes your energy level, I've become very pro-exercise, even though I did not like it, and I still don't love it. It's not something I love to do, but I know that the effects are so positive that I force myself to do it.
I would guess that even being a writer can be bad for your health. I mean, sitting and writing a lot, which is a lot of what writers do, can't be good for you. I mean, and the fact that you don't interact with people either, it's got to be you have a wife, you have kids, and I'm sure you have a lot of friends that you can go out to lunch and dinner with. But living the solitary life of a writer, which you know, it can't be good for your health.
Not at all. Solitude is a risk factor for depression, so I think, you know, it's not a huge coincidence. You look at the list of writers in history, and, you know, a whole bunch of them have committed suicide. So I do think it's a bit of a dangerous profession.
And what do you end up doing when you're sitting there by yourself, drinking or smoking? I mean, we're big drinkers or smokers. And
exactly.
Which you obviously don't have a problem with each, but...
So, one drink a day, as we know.
One drink a day, yeah.
So I definitely do that. But, sometimes do.
Well, it's been, I can't wait to see what you're going to do next, what you're going to write about next. You do articles for Esquire. How often are you in Esquire?
I am almost every month, and sometimes I skip a month. But, yeah, I'm an editor-at-large at Esquire, and I love being there. They're very nice to me, and it's one of the few magazines where you can still write about almost anything you want, as long as it's interesting.
Right, exactly. So I can't wait to see what you're going to tackle next.
Oh, me too. If you have any ideas, let me know.
Yeah, definitely. You're just a funny guy. It's so much fun to talk to you.
I had a great time. You're right back at you, David.
Yeah, you're just an easygoing, fun guy. And the book, again, is called Drop Dead Healthy. I should mention it is from Simon & Schuster. I don't know if I mentioned that. It's in hardcover. It's in all your bookstores now. Is it on audio, too? Do you do the audio version of it?
Yes, I did do the audio version.
That's fun to listen to, too. And the ebook and everything's available, sure. Well, I wish you all the best success with it. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I had a great time. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, you're welcome. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.